Okay, this is Kara Buick, and I'm in Salt Lake City, April 29th, 2004. We're at the 71st EVAC reunion, and I'm here with Lynn Kalmus Cole. So first off, just tell me where you grew up. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Appleton, Wisconsin, and spent my whole life there until I went to nursing school at Mount Sinai in Milwaukee. And from there, I was in the service.
Were you an only child? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister. She's 3 years older, and I have a brother who's 5 years younger. Mm-hmm. My sister Sherry, my brother Mark.
Are you the only nurse?
Yeah.
In your family?
Yeah, my sister's a teacher, and my brother's an engineer for ADM in Decatur, Illinois.
Uh-huh. What did your parents do?
My dad had a, he ran with my grandfather, they ran an implement company at Kalmus & Sons Implement Company. And my grandfather was a blacksmith. And he kept the shop going till he died. And my mom, she did different things, like she worked at a knitting mill, and she worked at a cafeteria.
Uh-huh.
You know, the food.
Uh-huh.
She worked at Primes. It's a department store thing, and the switchboard. So I mean, she did different.
Uh-huh. She did a lot of different things.
I've done.
And what? When did you start thinking about being a nurse?
Well, this was interesting because as I was growing up, I heard was we just knew you were going to be a nurse because, you know, from your since you were about 2 years old, anytime anyone was sick, you know, you'd carry in the glass of water with the aspirin, or you know do this or do that, and we just knew you were going to be a nurse. So I heard that all my life. Actually, I wanted to be a school teacher, an English teacher.
Uh-huh.
But I heard that so much, and then come to find out, and this was just recent. I didn't know this until maybe 5-6 years ago. My mother had always wanted to be a nurse. And so I think that's why I heard that. So I'm not sure I really should have been a nurse. I think I would have been better off as the school teacher.
Uh-huh. Did you think about anything else? Was it just nursing?
Actually, I went back and forth. I thought of going into the convent. It actually did. So I was really going back and forth, struggling with that or nursing, but I ended up going into nursing. Mm-hmm.
So you were raised a Catholic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And was that a very important part, I guess, of your life or your family?
Yeah,
activity.
It was. It was then. It has changed. But yeah. Yes, we went to church every Sunday. My mom had been Lutheran, but when she married my dad, she changed. So I had sort of that Lutheran and then Catholic.
Then you decided to be a nurse, and so you went to nursing school.
Right.
So that was a three-year.
It was a three-year program.
Did you live at home? Was that somewhere?
No, it was in Milwaukee, so I lived in the dorm.
Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was a Jewish hospital, so we had lox and bagels for breakfast. It was a very they were very strict, and there's a, you know, I mean, you couldn't, they really kept an eye on you, you know, and it was really strict. And, I also had, there was one area that I had a very hard time with, that was the surgical orientation. The nurse instructor who taught that you didn't get to meet her till you actually had that particular class. Mm-hmm. And we had heard a lot about her. We had heard. They told us that she would line us all up, and she just looks up and down, and then she'll pick someone out just random and go, you know, you, I'm going to flunk you out. We heard that, you know. Well, guess who she picked? So she's standing there, and all of a sudden she points at me, you, I'm going to flunk you out. So it was, she gave me an F, of course, for practical. But I stayed up all night studying, you know, I just studied, so I got A's, so it averaged out to a C, so she couldn't fuck me out, because it,
right.
I mean, but if I had not aced every test, I would have been gone. So that was very traumatic, and that was a 3-month stint there that we did. So when I got to Vietnam, and I was supposed to be a post-op nurse, and they tell me that the only opening they have right now is in surgery. No!
Wow. And was that, or were there a specific part of the nursing, different fields of nursing that you liked better than others? Or?
Yeah, obstetrics.
Okay.
I love the babies, the moms and the babies. But you graduate from nursing school and you try to get a job in obstetrics, and they say, but you have to have experience in order to get in obstetrics. Well, excuse me, but I just graduated, you know, how do I get the experience to get that first job? But when I came back from Vietnam, unfortunately the only jobs I could get, again, surgery just followed me for a while. It was just a nightmare. And then when we moved back to Appleton, they were telling me what openings he had. I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. And they said, well, we have one other opening, but I'm sure you don't want it. And I said, well, what's that? And they said, obstetrics. And I went, I said, well, but I have no experience. And said, oh, we don't care. We'll train you. I'll take it. So that's how I got into obstetrics. And then I was in most of the rest of my nursing career.
Finally got to do what you want.
Finally got to do the babies, yeah. Which helped a lot, because I had seen enough death and dying in Vietnam to last me the rest of my life. I needed to see life. You know, I mean, there is some death there, but here.
Was nursing school expensive then?
Well, I paid my own way through nursing school. So in high school, I worked in a bakery, and I worked in a meat department, and then I babysat. Because my parents had just enough money send one of us through college, and of course it was my brother. So my sister and I had to fend for ourselves. She paid her way through teaching, and I paid my way through nursing school. So it was expensive enough. I mean, for having to pay it yourself,
right?
Just odd jobs in school, babysitting.
Uh-huh. Did your parents really push you and your sister to do a career and to have a career? Was that something you kind of did on your own?
Well, like I said, I was told that I was going to be this nurse, you know. Yeah. So I think I was really pushed into that, but I don't remember. I don't know if they pushed my sister. She had just wanted to be a teacher. Oh. So,
yeah. And when did you join the nursing school?
I was in my senior year, and it was on a weekend, and I was in the lounge with a couple other girls, and this one girl comes in, and she's all excited. She had just talked to this recruiter, and he was telling her how we could go in as officers because we were going to be graduating, and all the opportunities, and especially this one hospital, if we asked for it, it's Fort Ord in California, right on the beach, you know, and he's sure we'd get it, and all this. So we all went down and talked to him, but I had friends who had told me that, who had just come back from Vietnam, and they said, whatever you do, don't go over there, you know, you don't want to go there. So I told him I didn't want to go to Vietnam, you know, what were my chances, and he said, absolutely none, can't send a female unless you volunteer. That was in 68.
Okay.
And so we were all thinking about it, and the next week he called and he said on that weekend he was taking a bunch of the recruits down to Florida on maneuvers, and did we want to go down with them?
Wow.
Gee. You know, here we'd be with this plane load of guys.
Uh-huh.
We had nothing else planned that weekend, so so we went, and they whined us and dined us and told us all this stuff. Oh, how nice it would be as officers, you know. So, sounded pretty good. But again, I talked to him about having to go to Vietnam. He says, absolutely not, no way. You know, if you want to go, we can have you there in a week, because they really need nurses. But if you don't, they cannot send you. Cannot send you. So the other three girls joined, and I was real hesitant. I was going back and forth, and I don't know. But I didn't have any commitments in Milwaukee, and you know, the travel sounded good, and so I finally joined. And then we went to boot camp in down in Texas, and that was in the fall. And then we got orders for Fort Ward. We're all excited. Beach, you know, California beach. So we had to be there the 1st of January in 69. So we got there, and I was there about a month, and I get these orders from Vietnam. So I go to the commander, and I explain to her the mistake that they made. And she just looked at me in this big grin, and she says, and do you have that in writing, Lieutenant? No. No, I don't. You didn't say I needed it in writing. So, and within the next month, the other girls who had joined with me, the other three, got orders also. And then, of course, we find out that Fort Ord was the staging area for nurses to go to Vietnam. Oh, no wonder we could get that. Yeah. So then the girl who talked the rest of us into going, she went AWOL, got pregnant, and was out of the service, and the other three of us, were on our way to sunny Vietnam.
Wow. What did your parents think?
Oh, when I called my parents, my mom told me that my dad stayed up all night going through my room, sure that somewhere was a piece of paper that would say I didn't have to go. Yeah.
Did they have a problem with you joining the nurse corps? Or was it just going to Vietnam?
Oh, they were.
Oh, they didn't like you joining the nurse corps either?
No, they weren't happy that I joined the Army, you know. There was a lot of stereotypes. I mean, back then, and there still is, though, with women. It's not as bad as it was then, but, you know, if a woman joined the service, it was only for one reason. And it wasn't nursing. And so my dad had problems with that, and, you know, so did my mom.
Was he that blunt about it? Did he say, are you joining to meet men, or did he?
No, he knew what the thoughts were.
Other people might think that about you.
Yeah,
okay.
And he knew me.
Okay. He raised you.
Yeah. No, he
didn't. Uh-huh. So he was just afraid that others might think that.
Yeah.
Did you have to kind of justify yourself to your friends or to anybody? Did you have to explain why you joined?
Not really. And then those friends of mine who had said, you know, you sure not going to be down here, I told them why. Told me I didn't have to go if I didn't, you know, fun, you know, and I'm not gonna.
Well, I'm interested in this recruiting trip down to Florida too. So I'm looking at how the military tried to recruit nurses, and what they, how they pitched it. So
yeah. Oh, we
what
were
kinds
whining.
Of things did they do?
Oh. Well, we went down. You know, I mean, of course, you know, we flew down with this plane load of these gorgeous guys, you know, and. But then, they took off to dinner. I mean, we had steak. And, I mean, they whined and dined us. It was really, you know, and told us about all these opportunities, you know. and we'd already gone, you know, we'd already would be graduating, so, but we could still join and we'd still get paid for that last little bit.
Okay.
You know, the last couple of months. But then, gee, if we wanted to go on, they'd pay for our education, you know, I mean, there's all these opportunities, the best equipment, you know, in the hospitals, blah, 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 which was all lies. But when I went to the dedication of the memorial in Washington, D.C., the Women's Memorial, I ran into, I don't know how many nurses, and they were from everywhere, from California, from Ohio, from Michigan, from everywhere, and I don't know how many had the same story, that the recruiter, the same thing happened to them, so they must go to all one school and they're taught, now this is what you say to these people. These are the lies you tell.
And what did you think about the officer part? Or that you could be an officer in the military? Did you really, was that?
Oh, they played that up, yeah. Oh, yeah, that, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, the pay would be so much better and you'd be looked up to. And,
what did you think about that? Was that a real...
Well, it sounded good at the time.
Okay.
It all sounded good. Fort Ord sounded good at the time. You know? I had no idea. They didn't tell us the rest of the story, you know, like, well, Harvey, you know, we didn't get the rest of the story.
Right. Wow. So you went to Fort Sam Houston then,
yeah,
in the fall for basic training. What was that like?
Well, that was funny. They had us up marching, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, we're out there, and the guys would line up on the thing and laugh at us, you know. And then they had this little Vietnam village thing that you, and what they did is they walked us around it, and then we had to sit there and they passed a gun around for us to hold. We were not allowed to shoot it because we were females. We got to hold the gun. We couldn't shoot it, but we got to pass it around. This is the gun, well, okay. And that was our orientation for going over. And I wasn't paying any attention because I wasn't going to Vietnam.
Right.
So I even wasn't paying attention to that little walk around the village. And then they did these play acting things. Where, I mean, we had, you know, you went out and you had all your gear and stuff and you had to find coordinates and stuff. But again, I didn't pay much attention. I wasn't going to go anywhere. I needed that stuff.
Right.
And then they give you all these different uniforms, and you have these long johns in case you go to some place cold like Antarctica. So it was, you know, and these wool things, which I'm allergic to wool, so I tried it on, and I broke it with Oh, and then when we got sent to Vietnam, anyway, they said, well, throw all that out. You'll never use that anymore.
Uh-huh. So when was it that you got there? Was it February, March?
In Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
June.
June, okay.
Yeah.
So you got your orders, you had a while.
Yeah, and then I had leave, month's leave, if I had to.
So you got there in June, 69?
Yes, I got there, day after or 2 days after Sharon Lee was killed. So, you know, coming in, that was the news. The nurse was killed.
So did you come into Long Bend then? Through the processing and got your orders to your hospital? Is that how
No, I think I came into the train.
Okay.
And I think I flew out of Long Bend.
Okay.
Going home. I'm pretty sure that's,
uh-huh,
it could have been reversed, but I'm pretty sure we flew into the train.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed overnight. There was just two of us. Well, the one went AWOL, the other girl came later, a little bit later. And so it was Cindy and I that flew over together. And well, we thought, well, at least we'll be together, you know. So we stayed over, it was late, so we stayed overnight at the Hooch's, or I think it's in the train to wherever the female quarters were.
Mm-hmm.
But then those nurses were telling us all these horror stories, you know. So, I mean, but first, first of all, landing, we landed and they opened the doors and it, the smell hit you. There was this horrible smell and the heat. I mean, you stood up to go down the steps there and that smell and the heat hit you first. And then there was this pop, 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 pop. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And then all of a sudden people are running everywhere and they're pushing us down the stairs and telling us to run to this building. We were under small arms attack getting off the plane. So that was, you know, so it started with that. Mm-hmm. Then we go over and we're staying with these nurses and they're telling us all these horror stories. And so this is, you know, and then the next morning we go and they tell us that we have to be separated. We went to two different places. We couldn't even be together. And then the plane, or the helicopter, ahead of mine, that left right before mine, it was shot down. And then I get to play coup, and it's in the evening, and I was in the same hooch with Linda Vandevanner. And we get there, and it was too late for me to go to headquarters to get my orders, which I thought was going to be post-op nursing. Because I had a whole 3 months experience in post-op. That's the most I had anywhere of anything. And that was while I was still, you know, the summer after nursing school before I went into service. So that was supposed to be my MOS. And when I was at Fort Ord, they put me in pediatrics. Well, that's good training for Vietnam. I really got to use that, you know. So I thought post-op nursing was going to be my MOS, so I wasn't worried about it. So I had to wait till the next morning to get my orders and my assignment. So we're sitting there, Linda's, we had these hooches and there were sidewalks and there were little steps and we were sitting on the steps outside of the nurses' quarters and there were a couple other nurses from my hooch out there and they were talking to me and telling me things and then I heard a whistle and a thud. And the next thing I knew, I'm sitting there by myself. Where did I go, you know? And I didn't know what was going on. Pretty soon Linda came out and she grabbed me and she said, just stay down and come in. And she said, go, just pick a bed, any bed, and go under it or under a rocket attack. So they had bunkers for the male officers and for the enlisted men, but none for the nurses. We had to just go under our beds, roll under our beds. On top of it, our quarters were on top of a hill, and on top of our hooches was a big red cross. So it's like, here they are. You know, it's like, hey.
Uh-huh. All in your first day.
Yep, and so, and then the next morning I went, and that's when they told me I had to go to surgery. And it's like, no, no. You know, I mean, after what happened in nursing school, that was a trauma and the stuff just telling me I had to go there. Mm-hmm. And then I got there and they said, well, we'll start you out circulating and then, you know, we'll teach you how to scrub and you just scrub, you know, do the instruments and stuff. In the meantime, there was a case going on and it was a really bad case. He had already had 100 units of blood. I believe he had both legs off. At least they had one was off and they were working on another one. He had a head injury and he had abdominal. This arm, they were amputating. And this arm was hanging by a tendon. And so, but they said just, you know, go on up and just watch. Just stand there and watch and see what's, you know, going on. So I'm standing there and I'm watching this. And one of the doctors looked up and he saw me standing there. Of course, you know, I'm in a gown and a mask. He doesn't know who I am. And he doesn't know I'm supposed to just be standing there. So he says, don't just stand there. He's going to lose that arm anyway. Cut it off. And he threw a scissors at me. So I had to cut his arm off the first 5 minutes I was there. So I do believe I got my post-traumatic stress the first 48 hours I was there. And then it was downhill from there. But I would say that first 48 hours probably did it.
And did you adjust? I mean, how did you get used to this?
I think I dissociated. I think I left my body. Because for a long time afterwards, when I got home and stuff and I thought of Vietnam, I never could see myself in the picture. I was always like looking down. So I really do think I dissociated. I do. And it wasn't until I had a soul retrieval. Now, I don't know if you know what that is. I went to a shaman and I had a soul retrieval done. She connects with your energy. You're laying down. You're both laying down, and she has her leg against yours, and she just connects. And then she has her guides help her to bring pieces of your soul. When you have trauma, she says that pieces of your soul leave, sort of like dissociating. And so she says, you know, she goes out there and her guides tell her what she needs to do, and she usually finds one or two little pieces of a soul and brings them back. Well, afterwards, she didn't even talk for a long time after, and then when she did, she said, this was incredible. I've never experienced anything like this, she said. She said, when I go somewhere to retrieve pieces of souls, there's always just little bits, one or two, maybe three, depending on the trauma. She said, your entire soul was still in Vietnam. She said, I don't know how you were alive here, how you could function, because almost your entire soul. And she had to, I don't know how many times she had to go back to her guides, because I wouldn't come. She went to bring the pieces back, and she said, I was just going from patient to patient to patient, and I wouldn't even listen to her at first. I just kept saying, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy, and I wouldn't even listen to her. So then she'd go back to her guides and find out what she had to do, which is back and forth. And finally, they said to get my daughter, and my daughter came, and my daughter told me, they didn't need me there anymore. These men were okay, and they didn't need me, but my family did. That when she lived, I lived to my home. And so that's how she got. And while that was going on with her, it was real interesting because I was seeing, it was like a slideshow in my mind. I'd see one trauma, and I'd feel that. And then it'd be gone. And then the next one would pop in. It was just like watching a slideshow of all the traumas I had over there. And I felt myself getting lighter and lighter and lighter. And then after that, it's the first time that when I thought of Vietnam, I was back in the picture. It's the first time. So that was just like 5 or so years ago. So it was like 25, 26 years later that happened. And it was interesting because a friend of mine, she wanted a soul retrieval done too, and she had come, but she asked if she could sit in on mine just to see what was happening. And I said, sure. And afterwards, this was before I told her that I was feeling lighter and everything and what was happening with me. When I sat up, she had this funny look on her face, and I said, what's the matter? And she said, I was watching you, and she said, it's just like you were like almost going off the floor. She said, it looked like you were just levitating. And then that's when I told her, I said, oh, that's funny, because I just felt myself getting lighter and lighter. Wow. So, but it's the first time that now when I see in my mind something, I'm in the picture.
Were you diagnosed with PTSD?
Yeah. Yeah.
When was that?
82.
Okay. How did you, were you going to vet groups or?
Shortly after I got back, I just was feeling I was going crazy, you know. And then I connected with Linda. Somehow someone had given me her phone number, and I called and I was talking to her. And she was telling me she had post-traumatic stress, and I said, well, what's that? And she was telling me about it, and I said, oh my God, said, I think I got that, you know, and I said, I'm not going crazy. I think that's what I have. And that might have been 79, 80, somewhere around there. And I didn't, I joined a veterans organization, but I didn't do counseling or anything until in 82, yeah, it was around November. It didn't happen. And I was starting to swear at my kids, and it's like, you know, I was going to go to the, it was the dedication, right after the New Year was going to be that dedication of the wall. Mm-hmm. And I was, had planned on going. So I had my choice, the wall or to get into a program in Tacoma. They had a program. But when I got, when I get really bad, I start swearing. Then I know it's time to do something. Because I don't do that normally. Uh-huh. But you know, I mean, here's my little kids, and I'm just, you know, I'm using the F word, you know, at my little kids, and it's like, I think I better skip the trip, and I think I better go. But that's another. They had never had a woman go through their PTSD program, and I didn't learn until a little bit later, but. When they got my application, they took it right to the head of the hospital, and they didn't know if they should accept me or not, because they didn't know what my agenda was. Was I a woman's liver and I just wanted to, you know, because they'd never taken any liver before, or they didn't know what to do. I guess I caused quite a stir. I found out later. Well, they decided to take me, but the guys stayed in one big room because at night they'd have, you know, a lot of had nightmares, and so then they could help each other out. That was part of the therapy. Well, they couldn't put me in, you know. My husband would have been. So when I first got there, the hospital only had one female ward, but then because it was the only female ward, it had everything, everything. So they put me over there the first night, and I tell you, well, the first thing was when my family left, I was going to tell my husband something else I had forgotten, and the door was locked, and I couldn't get out. Well, that's a horrible feeling. When you're on the other side of the door, you can't get out. You're locked in. That was horrible. That was real horrible for me. And then I was in a room by myself at first. But then during the night, an overdose, a gal who had overdosed, they brought her in. And nobody came to check on her. And so I'm sitting there like this all night, watching her chest, make sure she's still breathing. So in the morning, when I went over to the group, the guys were really upset, and they were complaining, and they went on a strike, and they said they weren't going to do anything else until I was in that unit, and I should be on that unit. And they needed to find a place for me because I didn't belong locked up somewhere.
And they were really, Vietnam vets,
yeah,
the guys.
They were really angry. Uh-huh. And so what they did, there was a closet right next to the big room. Uh-huh. And so they cleaned the closet up, put a bed in it, a little dresser. And so that's where he was. I was in the closet next day.
Wow.
But I spent... I went right after Christmas. I came home in February because my group wasn't done, but they didn't know what to do with me. Mm-hmm. They were real good at what to do with the guys because they had all the experience with it, but they really didn't know what to do with me. And there was even a point where the guys kind of turned on me, and they thought that I wasn't telling the truth because they had one or two or however, you know, a few traumas that they could really pinpoint. I mean, yeah, they were out on patrols and stuff, but I mean, the actual firefights were. Mm-hmm. But every day was a trauma for me. And so, you know, and because I couldn't pinpoint specific traumas, it's like every day was one.
Right.
You know, they thought that I wasn't working, that I wasn't doing what I should be doing there. So it got hard, and it got to a point where they just didn't know what to do with it anymore. And degree that I just really wasn't getting anywhere out of it. Yeah. You know, so I went home.
Was this a VA hospital? Mm-hmm. Was it Toma?
Toma, yeah, Wisconsin.
Okay.
T-O-M-A-H.
What did the guys think about? How did they perceive you?
Oh, they were very protective, I tell you. It was a combination of drug and alcohol. It was like this, and so down one wing was the drug and alcohol, and the PTSD was down this other one. So then there was, of course, the thing of showers. Where do I shower? The shower was down by the drug and alcohol guys. Well, the Vietnam vet says, we'll go and we'll stand guard by the door because you can't trust those guys. And all this, they were, you know, all this about, so finally the nurses just said, you know, they gave me a key. I went down and used the nurse's shower. You know, once they, I was there a couple of days and they knew they could trust me. I wouldn't do anything rash. So I mean, everything was a problem. I think they were real glad when I left.
I just didn't know what to do.
No. And then the interesting thing, when the guys got out, they automatically got 30% disability. They gave me 10.
What was the justification for that?
Because the guys were out in the field and I wasn't. I didn't have the trauma sacrifice. No, just more. No. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, no understanding. So then when the guys went back and to try to get higher, they got 50%. And then I got 30. Uh-huh. You know,
is that where they diagnosed PTSD at this program?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I was diagnosed.
Uh-huh. And then did you go to meet with other groups after that? Once you left?
Yeah, I went to Milwaukee. See, there's never anything by me. I have to always travel. I went down to Milwaukee for a while, but I tell you, being in the men's group, I mean, they talk about their guns. They talk about their guns. And they talk about their guns. And they talk about the guns. I wasn't getting anything out of it, you know? Uh-huh. They just, the same stories. And then I was at a group in Wausau, and they talk about their guns. And they talk about their guns. And it just, the same people I was in, the group within Wausau, they're still going to counseling and they're still in the same place they were. They haven't moved on. There's nothing in Wisconsin for women. So then I heard about a group of nurses that from Vietnam that at the VA in Minneapolis. So once a week for 3 years I drove to Minneapolis and back, stayed overnight, and went to that group. Now, you know, I got a lot out of that. They had a lot of different things that they did. They had group and they had art therapy and they had all kinds of different therapies that they used, you know, not just one thing. But then they lost funding and they shut the program down. So that was the end of that. But the men's group is just, you know, I tried the men's group a couple of times, but it just, because their experiences just were not mine, like mine at all. You know.
And did your husband serve? Was he in
no.
the military? You said he wasn't before you took him.
No, he has a lot of, poor guy. Because, you know, you go to some kind of a group or you go to the wall or something, you know, and right away people will walk up to him and say, oh, where were you, man, you know, and I wasn't in the service, my wife was, you know. I think it's really hard for him. But he came to this. I didn't know if he'd come, but he's here. He even bought a shirt.
Uh-huh.
I thought maybe if anything he'd bought, just buy a hat, a baseball hat. Yeah. He bought a shirt, so who knows.
Is he supportive? I mean, does he kind of understand yet?
As much as he can, yeah.
More so now than before.
Yeah.
So what really helps? So what really helped you to get through PTSD?
I'm not through it.
Not through it yet.
I'm not through it, though. No, I still have those weary days.
Uh-huh.
And that play, A Piece of My Heart,
mm-hmm.
I realized why when I get really upset I have to drink a Coke. And it wasn't until they had the play in Marshfield and they asked me to be an advisor. They had heard that I had been in Vietnam and that was in the book also.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me to come and be an advisor, so I, a consultant, so I did. And it wasn't until about the third time that I sat through the play that it hit me that one night where they're talking about the one woman was the alcoholic
mm-hmm.
and the other one, she said, no, I just drank a lot of Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, that's what I did because I didn't drink. There were a lot of parties and stuff and you know, there was one group that always went to this one hooch and they did do a lot of drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do that, and so then I remembered I drank a lot of Coke. That was my thing, especially when I was really upset about something. I'd be down on a Coke. So now I know why. Here, when I get really upset, there better be a Coke in the refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
It can't be anything else. It has to be a Coke.
Uh-huh.
And it finally hit me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even know that. I mean, I had it never dawned on me till about the third time through that play, and it was like, oh my gosh,
uh-huh.
An aha moment.
Did you recognize any parts of the play that you thought, that's me?
Oh, yeah, and my daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know, that Rochelle in there, mm-hmm. Rochelle, who's the Agent Orange,
uh-huh.
that's my daughter, Michelle. Yeah, there's a few things of me in there and my daughter.
Watch it.
Yeah.
That must be, I don't know, maybe hard, maybe.
Yeah.
I've healing in a way at the same time.
Both. I've seen it several times. I saw it out in Washington, D.C. when mm-hmm. they did the Women's Memorial. So, I mean, that was a professional group. I've seen it done by kids in high school,
uh-huh.
college.
Uh-huh.
And every time it's different.
Uh-huh.
You know, every time
uh-huh.
the director's always perceive it differently, but it's hard. It's hard to sit with.
I guess we're kind of going out of chronology, but we got you to Vietnam
for
about a month, and then we left.
Yeah.
So maybe we can go back for a little bit. Maybe pick up on the other 11 months. Did you work in surgery the whole time you were there?
The whole time.
Least favorite.
My least favorite, and I just that whole year I think I never felt like I really was good enough or and did enough. And when we had what they call pushes, you know, when you, instead of a helicopter landing with a couple of patients, a Chinook would land, we call them shit hooks, you know, a Chinook would land with 100 patients.
Right.
And you didn't leave the OR for a long time. Well, we didn't have enough doctors for that many patients, so the nurses and sometimes even the corpsmen had to do the minor, like the debridements. And they showed you once how to cut here and there and, you know, get the dead tissue off and stuff, but that was it. Then you're on your own, and I'm doing these surgeries, and it's like, I don't know what I was, you know, you really don't know what you're doing. And,
uh-huh.
and there's nerves in there, and there's tendons, and there's things that, and it's like, you know, I always have wondered if I did more harm than good, if there's someone out there crippled who wouldn't have been or something because I did something wrong. So.
Did you kind of get better? Do you think you have on-the-job training, I guess?
I suppose I did, but I still, you know, you still, you're never sure. Really sure you weren't trained for that. You're never really sure what if you were doing the right thing or not. At least I was.
Did you find that empowering or did you find that scary?
It was scary. It was horrifying. Because I knew what I could be doing. Someone might not walk if I screwed up.
What about the doctors? Did you relate to them well, I guess? Was there more, what was your relationship with the doctors?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, there was. We had to, when you go to shave a patient, they had the old-fashioned straight edge, the ones like that, you know, those big ones. And I had never used one before. And the first guy I had to shave came off the field, so he had big beard, and of course he had face wounds. So they told me to shave his face. Well, they hand me this big thing.
Oh, my God.
So I go and I take one swipe, and I big gash. So the anesthetist wrote, and he showed me. I mean, I actually saw it later. He told me he did, but I thought he was joking. But he did. First incision made by Lieutenant Kelman. And then after that case, when my shift was over, I got sent home with one of those razors, and I was told to shave my legs. Well, I came back the next day all cut up, but I tell you, I learned how to use that razor.
Hope you're not still using that razor.
Oh, no. No. So, I mean, there were some funny things. Uh-huh. Of course, that poor guy with his gash probably doesn't think it was very
fun. Did you, I guess in surgery, did you get to know any of the patients very well? Or
no. And they, you know, they went right from us to, that was the other thing that was hard, because we never knew if all of our hard work was in vain, you know, if they lived, if they died. You never heard, because from us they went to recovery, and then when they were stabilized a little bit, they were flowing out to like Cameron Bay or, you know, maybe Saigon or one of those places to stabilize a little bit more. And then they got shipped to Japan until they were stable enough to go to the States. So anywhere along the line they could have died, and we never knew. So that was hard, not knowing if all your hard work paid off or not, or if we died anyway. And then we had stuff like when we had a big push, we didn't, our drugs supply never got to us, and we found out that they were, had been stolen, and they were on sale in the black market down in Franco City. And so there were several guys who died because we didn't, you know, they went to cardiac arrest and we didn't have the drugs to use to bring them back. Then we ran out of bandages, so we were ripping up our sheets. Because all the bandages were on, so, you know, you could go to Plaku City and buy them. But we didn't have them.
Well, what did you do in your downtime? You said there was a group that kind of drank, and then you drank your Cokes.
Yeah. Well, there didn't seem to be much downtime. Uh-huh. We worked minimum 12-hour shifts, and 6 days a week. But you could have been walking back to your hooch, your shift was done. If a Chinook came, you heard a Chinook, you turned right around and you just went. And then you might be there for days. There didn't seem to be a lot of downtime, but what did we do? Okay, I spent a lot of time in my room, music, listening to music. That was my salvation, just listening to music. You could go to the movie theater, but there never was one movie where it was from the beginning to end. Somehow they seem to show the second reel first, and then the first reel, and then the third, or maybe the third one, and the second, and then the first. Or I never saw one movie that went from beginning to end. And a lot of times we were under red alert, what they called red alert, so I have a picture of me going on a date, in quotes there, with this guy, and I have on a dress and my flak jacket and my helmet, going to the theater. Uh-huh. And we had a swimming pool. However, you could only be in the swimming pool if there was a guard. Well, the guards were the EMs who worked the same shifts as you did, and then besides that, they had a full guard duty. So there was seldom that there was a lifeguard there. so very seldom you could go. But I did see a miracle happen. I actually saw someone walk on water because we were at the swimming pool and we came under a rocket attack, and I swear this guy went from one end to the pool to the other on top of the water. He never hit. So,
wow.
And then a real dumb thing I did, this, just for a short period of time, I was seeing this special forces guy, and he commandeered a Jeep one night, and he wanted to take me out riding, and this is at night, in his Jeep. Well, I told him I wouldn't go unless my friend Sharon could come along. I wasn't going to go alone. So she agreed to come along. So I got on this orange, bright orange dress. And we're going, and it had rained, you know, it had rained, and there were these big puddles. And so, and then the mud was splashing up over, and we were just soaked, and so we were laughing, and just, and it wasn't until the next morning that it hit me. It's like, are you crazy? There, you're out in the middle of the night, the BC air all around, you got on a bright orange dress, you are laughing, there are landmines everywhere. What were you thinking? I never did that again. And then you did get one R&R, and you did get one, one R&R and one
in-country R&R.
No, we could go twice. Okay. But okay. One was called an R&R and one was called something else. Hopefully in my story.
What was that called?
Okay. Anyway, so it was there in June, and by Christmas time I had it. I mean, I didn't think I could spend one more day. I had wanted to go to Australia and to Hong Kong. Those were the two places I wanted to go. But when I got to the point where I just had to go somewhere, the only thing that was open was the Philippines. So I took it. So we get there, and I'm in the hotel, and I'm looking out the window, and it's, you know, city lights and stuff. And then I looked out the back window, and it's here's some water buffalo, and it's the, you know, it looked just like Vietnam. <It's> like, what? I thought I was back in Vietnam. And then ice cream. That's the one thing I missed the whole year. Ice cream. I never got ice cream. Some of the nurses who dated Air Force guys got ice cream.
Uh-huh.
But I never did. So the first thing I wanted when I was there, ice cream. So I ordered ice cream, and I got, I don't know what it was, but it wasn't ice cream like I mean, I'm from Wisconsin, you know, it's like, this ain't ice cream. It was gritty, sandy-like, it was, I don't know what, but it wasn't ice cream, but I wanted to just go. So I wanted to really go to Australia really bad, but, like, you had to sign up even before you came in country because there was such a waiting list. And they says, well, if you want to stay, you know, if you, re-up to stay longer, you can go. And I said, that's all right, I'll go as a civilian someday. Uh-huh. I'll stay here any longer than I have to. So the second place I went was Bangkok, Thailand, which is sort of a given. But I mean, you know, at least I saw the temples and stuff. So, and again, I ordered ice cream, and it wasn't like the stuff in the Philippines, but it wasn't ice cream either. I don't know what it was, but so I never got ice cream. So when I got home, the first thing my mom says, you know, what do you want? You know, steak, you know, what do you want? Ice cream, give me ice cream. Yes. Cup of ice cream.
Uh-huh.
So she took me grocery shopping with her once and never again. We're grocery shopping, and we're walking down an aisle, and a woman behind us dropped a can. Just like that. Shh. I'm down on the floor, I'm in a ball, got my hand over my head like this. Everybody's looking at me. My mother's just in horror. She didn't know what was going on. We got rocketed and mortared so much, it just,
yeah.
It's just reaction, you know. So she never took me grocery shopping with her. She asked me what I wanted, and then she'd bring it. She didn't take me anymore.
And you said you dated a guy, and just how did that kind of happen?
It wasn't really dating.
People?
That's why I said in quotes. Yeah. You know, you meet a couple of guys coming to visit friends who are in the hospital or something, and they ask you to the theater or to go to the pool with them or something.
No, were they enlisted or were they officers? Or was there
a combination?
There wasn't much
like special forces.
That.
Or, oh, there was.
There was.
Okay. Oh yeah. So you know.
So if you
geez, they came to our hooch once. Yeah, this enlisted man. So we're hiding them. You know, everybody they know that they're coming down the thing, coming to do an inspection. So everyone's going from room to room. Where do they put them? You know, where can we hide them? Because they're looking everywhere and they're pulling the bed, you know, they're lifting up your beds and looking underneath and stuff. And so, oh my gosh, I can't remember where we finally hit him, but they didn't find him. No, we couldn't.
So they
yeah.
did.
Oh,
they enforced
yeah.
that.
Big time. Yeah, you'd be a big couple.
Mm-hmm. When there were no, I guess, superior officers around, did you really think you were different than the enlisted guys? Or was the officer an enlisted distinction? You really thought about?
Oh, I didn't.
You didn't?
I hated that saluting crap.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I got to be pain actually.
Uh-huh.
Oh, not gonna happen. But they had to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And was your hooch, did you stay by yourself? Did you have to have a roommate?
The hooch had seven.
Okay.
Women in it. There were seven little rooms, and then the last one was a bathroom. So Linda Van Vanna was one, and Sue Cartwright, has she been taking
her? I'm not sure, I know that name.
Yeah. I was super copio at the time. And she used to make this, we called it procopio punch. Mm-hmm. Well, it was wicked. I did have that. I did have some of that. I also have two mountain yard bracelets that I earned. I don't know if you know about mountain yard bracelets. Okay. You have to earn them. I only got to one mountain yard village. They right before I came, they were doing a lot of things, going to the villages and, you know, inoculations and a lot of stuff like that. But then it got too dangerous, so they cut it out and couldn't go. But I did get to one. And in order to, you sit with the chief, you know, and there's a tribe. They drink rice wine. And in order to get a mountain yard bracelet, you have to drink a certain amount of rice wine. Well, I got two. I don't remember. I don't know how I got them. But I got two. I don't remember a thing about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, when you don't drink, and then that's pretty powerful stuff, I've been told. I believe it.
Uh-huh. Did you not drink before you went to Vietnam?
No.
Was that a religious?
No, we
just kind of practiced.
Well, my
parents
drink all the time, you know, and they told us if, you know, we could. I mean, so growing up, we could, if we wanted something, we could have it.
Uh-huh.
Not my brother, my sister don't drink either. It's just it was always there, and we just didn't
uh-huh.
want it.
Uh-huh. Huh. That's interesting. Cause it seems like a lot of people who went to Vietnam ended up drinking, even if they didn't before, just
right.
because it was available and.
No. If it's an ice cream drink, I like it.
Uh-huh.
It has to be sweet and you know, like, I can't stand a beer. Oh, yuck. And I never smoked because I paid my way to nursing school. And to me, I mean, that was just like lighting a dollar bill, you know, and to watch it go bye-bye. So I never did that. So.
Now, you said that Ms. Van de Mantra was in your hooch.
Mm-hmm.
So you've read Home Before Morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just recently found out that there was a big controversy about the book
oh,
when
yes.
it came out.
Yes.
What did you think about that, the whole controversy?
Except for a couple of things that are her own personal things. That's my story. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was my witch maid and we worked in surgery together, so that's my book too. Other than her couple of personal things, that would be exactly my story. It is true. And the nurses, it really made me mad because the nurses who, you know, said it wasn't true, it's like, well, you know, maybe it wasn't true for you. Maybe that wasn't your experience, but it sure was ours. Yeah, so, I mean, I wrote in to wherever who had that big thing. You know, they were going to make it into a movie, and it got stopped. So that stupid idiot. And then she goes and gets her book done. Yeah, it's like, okay, here. Yeah, we don't want Linda's done, but you... then your book pops up, you know. But I wrote in and, like, you know, told them. That was my story. In fact, when I went to Toma, when I first got there, I couldn't remember anything. In fact, I even was wondering if I even was in Vietnam because I just couldn't remember anything. And then I heard that Linda's book was coming out, so I talked with a guy who was the head of our program. And it wasn't out yet, but it was had been printed. So he called and asked him if they would not send a copy and explain the situation, and they sent a copy, and once, and then he had me read the book, and then stuff came back. Then I remembered, but you know, until I read the book, I didn't even know I was, you know, I was wondering whether I was even there, because I couldn't remember anything.
What do you think the problem was that they had with the book?
Well, it was that gal.
It was another woman who wrote a book.
Yeah.
Patricia Walsh.
Yeah. And I think she didn't want, you know, she didn't want, she wanted the limelight.
Okay.
She didn't want Linda's book out there.
Uh-huh.
She didn't want the movie out there. She wanted, that's what I think.
Uh-huh. There's a file in the Army Nurse Corps archives about, that had some clippings and things from the newspapers. And some of it seemed like she didn't like the stories about parties. And seemed like she didn't, she thought that it portrayed nurses in a negative light.
That's right. It was part of it.
Do you think it does that or not? Or
well, it's what happened. Uh-huh. Linda wrote what happened. Linda was one of the partiers. Linda liked to party.
Uh-huh.
She had fun. Linda was Linda.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you've read her book, so. Uh-huh. Linda liked to party. And that happened. I mean, geez, you had a, you know, you went nuts over there. You didn't have something. I mean, I had my music.